CMSSM. So I'm going to be talking about special precision relations between the parameters of the Chargino and Neutralino sector of the MSSM. And the main point of my talk today is to really discuss how we can get some experimental hold on physics that is kinematically inaccessible at future accelerators. So imagine you have some heavy physics going on at 10 TeV or greater. And I'd like to address how we can use an effective field theory analysis as a way to gain information about that heavy physics that you can't produce directly. And so the way in which I'm going to try to understand the dynamics of that heavy physics is by looking at the quantum mechanical effects that occur by integrating out the heavy physics. And I'm going to be looking at the effective dimension 4 hard supersymmetry breaking operators that you get after integrating out heavy states. So I have an outline. I'll give a somewhat lengthy introduction, I think, and then I'll just start talking first about what I'll call wrong Higgs interactions with the Higgs quark Yukawa interactions. And then I'll talk about wrong Higgs interactions that are similar to these, but that exist in the Chargino-Neutralino sector of the MSSM. And then I'll discuss a way in which you can integrate out heavy states, namely the messengers of gauge mediation, and generate radiatively these wrong Higgs interactions. And then maybe if I have time, I'll talk about some ways that we can take physical parameters of the Chargino sector and combine them in a particular way that isolates these the effects of these wrong Higgs interactions. And then I'll conclude. So we'll just see how far I get. OK, so we should really start with what we know best, or what works best, I should say. And that is the standard model. So the standard model has three gauge groups, SU3, SU2, and U1, and three types of particles. The spin-1 particles are all adjoints under the gauge group. And they have zero charge under the U1 symmetry. And they're all, well, like I said, adjoints of the gauge groups. There's the spin-1/2 fermions. And these fermions all transform under some, well, under the fundamental representation of these two gauge groups. And they have the following U1y charges. And then there's a mysterious Higgs boson that has not been detected, but maybe will be soon. And Brian just discussed a little bit about the hierarchy problem associated with the Higgs. So the Higgs, in order to break electroweak symmetry, the field itself has to have a vacuum expectation value. What drives the field getting a vacuum expectation value is the Higgs potential having a negative mass parameter. And in order for that mass parameter to be the electroweak scale and have the standard model be the valid theory all the way up to the Planck scale, you, because of quadratic dependence, because radiatively the Higgs mass is renormalized and depends quadratically on the cutoff, then there's a fine-tuning of that Higgs mass parameter. And therefore, if you think that's ugly, then you want to reformulate this theory and come up with something better where there is not some type of radiative instability associated with the Higgs mass. And in order to do this, one way to solve this problem, as well as to have a dark matter candidate and get the theory to unify, which the standard model doesn't do, is to introduce an extra symmetry. Not a local symmetry like the gauge groups here, but rather a global symmetry. This global symmetry is supersymmetry. The algebra of supersymmetry is given by this type of formula here. The Qs represent the generators of supersymmetry. And the algebra closes under anti-commutation rather than commutation relations. And what this means is that the blue fields, which I've written here, these are the standard model fields. Essentially what happens is when you impose this extra global symmetry on the standard model and require that it be globally supersymmetric, you effectively double the number of fields. So every field associated with every standard model field is a superpartner. So now the fields come in pairs. And it's actually convenient to think about these pairs as being components of a type of vector. And that vector we want to think of as being a superfield. So here, for any superfield X, it has both a scalar and a fermionic component, just like, say, the Higgs, being a scalar, has a partner particle, which is a fermionic component. And you can think about these superfields being like vectors with components. And so notice that, well, it turns out there's also what's called an auxiliary field, F. And by dimension, by dimensional analysis, theta has dimensions minus 1/2. So theta squared has dimensions minus 1. In order for the total field to have dimension 1, the F has to have dimension 2. Now, this field is non-dynamical. It doesn't have a kinetic term associated with it. It's really just an auxiliary field. And if you write down a theory with a non-zero vacuum expectation value for this extra field, you find that the potential of that theory, the scalar potential, has a non-zero minimum. If you go back now and look at the supersymmetry algebra, and you sandwich this algebra on either side between the vacuum state of your theory, you'll see that if the vacuum is supersymmetric, the Qs will annihilate that vacuum. And the left-hand side will be zero, exactly zero, if the vacuum is supersymmetric. That means that the right-hand side must also be zero if it's supersymmetric. And since the vacuum has no momentum piece, it only has an energy piece, say the P0 is the non-zero part of the four momentum, then supersymmetry constrains the vacuum energy to be zero. So if the vacuum energy is greater than zero, as it is when you have a non-zero F, then you find that supersymmetry is broken. Therefore, we can parameterize supersymmetry breaking, and as I'll do in the rest of the talk, with non-zero values for this auxiliary F component of this superfield. Now, since I said this thing was like a vector, it's worth mentioning that the analog of a dot product is basically the analog of a dot product, or making an invariant under this with these vectors, is basically kind of like just multiplying these superfields, taking holomorphic products of these, and integrating over this extra coordinate called theta. All right. So this is the analog of taking a dot product. And in this way, you can make supersymmetric Lagrangians. So in order to take the Yukawa, so if we're going to incorporate the standard model, we really need Higgs quark Yukawa interactions. And so in order to get these appropriately, we actually need to introduce an extra Higgs doublet. All right, so now there's not just one Higgs, but a Higgs up and a Higgs down. The Higgs up couples to the up type fields, and the Higgs down couples to the down type fields. And so a piece of this thing called the superpotential is a Higgs up, a quark, and a quark coupling. All right, but it also predicts that they're supersymmetry also predicts that there are many other additional scalar quark couplings. So namely the Higgs has a fermionic superpartner, and so one of these couplings will be squark, quark, and then Higgsino. That's an example of another coupling predicted by supersymmetry. Okay, so that's the minimal supersymmetric standard model. Now, if I just left it like that and I just said we have supersymmetrized the standard model, this model would be completely incorrect. The reason it would be incorrect is because we haven't seen any of these particles. They all have to be heavier than the standard model particles that we haven't seen. All right? And if that's to be true, then supersymmetry can't be, the underlying theory can't be supersymmetric now. It must be broken in some way. So if supersymmetry is broken, and it must also stabilize the Higgs, then the Susie breaking scale, if I write the relevant mass scales of the theory, of the supersymmetric theory, then there's sort of the mass scale of electroweak symmetry breaking. And then not too far above it must be the scale of supersymmetry breaking, or the superpartners. And so above this scale, this supersymmetry breaking scale, in order to keep the Higgs mass from being destabilized by quantum corrections, Susie sort of has to effectively take over up here. And the way that happens is if every operator in my Lagrangian that breaks supersymmetry, it must be small at high scales. So that means that I have to, the only way I can break supersymmetry is by writing what are called soft supersymmetry breaking operators in the Lagrangian. And this amounts to only breaking supersymmetry with relevant operators. I can't, in order to softly break supersymmetry and accomplish all the nice features that it has, I have to make sure that all the operators that I write down for phenomenological purposes to raise the masses of these particles all those operators that break supersymmetry have to be relevant operators where the mass scale or the mass scale of the coefficient of those operators is not much higher than the electroweak scale. Okay, and as it turns out, if I do that and I write all the possible soft breaking operators and Yukawa interactions and so on, the MSSM in total in that ugly form has 124 parameters. Right? The standard model itself had 19, and those naturally carry over into the MSSM, where the one unknown parameter of the standard model, the Higgs boson mass, is analogous to the light Higgs mass in the MSSM. The extra 105 new parameters, right, come from, all except for what I call the mu term on the previous slide, they all these new complicated parameters come from relevant SUSY breaking operators, from this soft supersymmetry breaking Lagrangian. So I don't know anybody who thinks this is the true fundamental theory with 105 extra parameters, all right? So I think everybody has in mind that really what's going on is that there's an underlying theory of spontaneous supersymmetry breaking that has only a few number of parameters. And what happens is this theory breaks supersymmetry spontaneously, giving a non-zero F term. So F of X is not equal to zero by some field equation. And as a result, this spontaneous supersymmetry breaking gives you the MSSM as well as all of its 124 parameters, except that they're not all independent. They're related in special ways. And so as a phenomenologist, it's our job to try to experimentally determine what these parameters are, look at the relations between all of these soft supersymmetry breaking parameters, and then try to determine what this fundamental underlying theory is based on the relations between all those parameters. And the special relations between these parameters are highly determined by the mechanism in which supersymmetry breaking in this underlying theory is communicated and gives rise to all of the soft supersymmetry breaking terms in our soft supersymmetry breaking Lagrangian, or the MSSM. Yes, please.
Was it construct just a phenomenological model demonstrating this and showing its viability with respect to data? I guess
yes.
You need an underlying theory, but.
Yes, there's always, and as it stands, there's one of the main topics of conversation now, is the little hierarchy problem. And so many of these types of models have some type of small hierarchy problem with it. Not of the scale of the electroweak versus Planck scale hierarchy, but more of a 1%-ish tuning in the parameters to get it to work out right. But there are a variety of models, which I'll say in the next page, there are a variety of ways to mediate supersymmetry breaking. So there are a variety of ways that people have used to communicate supersymmetry breaking from that fundamental theory to the MSSM. Gauge mediation, gravity mediation, anomaly mediation, mirage mediation, and there's probably others out there that I failed to mention. But for the point of this talk, one of the popular, one nice way that I like is called gauge mediation. And the reason I like it is because it naturally explains why there are no flavor problems in the MSSM. So the way gauge mediation works is you do kind of like what I said earlier. You parameterize supersymmetry breaking by a superfield that receives a vacuum expectation value for its scalar component, as well as a non-zero F term, which again, remember, signifies supersymmetry breaking. Then what happens is you have a Yukawa interaction, or what I call the superpotential. And this Yukawa interaction basically allows the supersymmetry breaking in Z to be coupled to some other particles called messengers, all right, which I'll denote M and M bar. Now, these messengers are charged under the standard model gauge interactions. And because they have charge under the standard model gauge interactions, they experience supersymmetry breaking from Z through a Yukawa coupling, and then through the gauge interactions, they communicate supersymmetry breaking to all of the MSSM particles. All right, and in this way, when you actually integrate out these heavy states, these messengers, what you wind up with are Gaugino masses and Skork masses, and all of the soft supersymmetry breaking operators that you need for phenomenological purposes. So this is a dynamical way to explain the origin of the soft supersymmetry breaking Lagrangian. And so in this case, the Gugino masses come in at one loop, the scoring masses come in at two loops, and if you look at the overall mass scale of the Gugino's and the scorks, you'll see that they're of the same order of magnitude. All right, so just take the square root. Now, phenomenologically, in order to have the supersymmetry, the soft supersymmetry breaking operators, just above the electroweak scale, the electroweak scale being about 256 GeV, 246, 256. F over Z, this ratio, remember, F has mass dimension 2. Z is just the VEV of a scalar field, mass dimension 1. So F over Z must be between 10 and 100, maybe closer to the upper end, about 100 TeV. All right, this is required by phenomenology in order that we haven't seen these particles yet. Now, with the ratio set here to be about 100 TeV by phenomenology, then Z, the VEV of the scalar field in the spurion here, sets the overall messenger scale. So the messengers themselves could be really heavy or kind of light. All right? If F over Z squared is much, much less than 1, then it means the VEV of Z is very large, and the actual mass of the messengers is also really big. So the messenger mass could be way up here. And this is if Z is large. Or the messenger mass could be down here if Z is small. Okay? So if F over Z squared is approximately 1, then the messengers can be light. Okay? They definitely have to be heavier than the other soft supersymmetry breaking, because they have to be at least a loop factor heavier than all the other soft parameters. But they can be quite small. Okay, so within the context of gauge mediation, there's a couple different questions here. One question is the overall messenger mass, is it heavy or is it light, or relatively light? And is this really the simplest, is this really the way the messengers interact with supersymmetry breaking? Is there maybe a more complicated way that the messengers interact? And might more complicated messenger interactions help in solving what are called the mu and the b problems in gauge mediation? Okay, so there's some questions here about exactly what the scale of the messengers are and how they interact with other fields. And questions about messengers are questions about physics that is 10 TeV or greater. And so now we get to the point here, is that in order to address questions of physics that is above 10 TeV, 10 TeV is just kinematically inaccessible at accelerators. So, but we still want to try our best to understand, well, if there's a way to gain some information about physics above a 10 TeV, then we'd like to do that. And the way we're going to approach this is we're going to look for special features, special effects that are generated by the quantum effects of these heavy states. We're going to integrate them out and take into account what are called their threshold corrections. And so what we're going to look for are operators that are dimension 4 and Suzy breaking. So one of the things I told you was that in order to softly break supersymmetry, you really could only put operators that softly break supersymmetry into the theory. In order to stabilize the hierarchy, you couldn't put operators that are dimension 4 Suzy breaking operators. But in general, below the Suzy breaking scale, you might expect to have loop corrections that generate those operators. And so that's what we want to look for, are what are called Wrong-Higgs interactions. So if I write the relative mass scales of our theory of supersymmetry on the vertical axis here, at some high scale, you might have your underlying theory of spontaneous supersymmetry breaking. And then if you go below the messenger threshold, you'll be left with just the MSSM. And then you might pass through this particle threshold, and you're left with, say, we're in a region of parameter space where all the Higgs are lighter than the particles. This might leave you with an effective two Higgs doublet model. And then you can integrate out the heavy Higgs and be left with the standard model, and so on. And so I'd like to address two points. One is, let's pretend that we find ourselves in 2 years or something, or, well, when the ILC turns on or something, maybe 20 years. But we want to imagine we find ourselves only kinematically accessible to the states in region one, where we can only detect the 2X doublets. How can we infer information about parameters of the MSSM that are kinematically inaccessible? Okay, that's going to be one part. And then the second part of the talk, just later, if I get to it, I'll talk about how we can infer, let's pretend we exist in region two here, where we have access to the MSSM particles, or at least the charginos and neutralinos of the supersymmetric standard model. And let's pretend we want to gain some information about what happens about the messengers and their interactions, or those heavy states. How are we going to gain that information? And so the way we're going to do it is by looking at dimension four hard supersymmetry breaking interactions. So let's look at the 2X doublet model first. So at tree level in the MSSM, you have Higgs quark couplings, right? And if I imagine I'm at a working at that 2 Higgs, I'm in the effective 2 Higgs doublet model, and all the super partners are integrated out. The way I do that at tree level is I just take any interaction that has super partners in it, and I just remove that, I strip that interaction out of the Lagrangian. And that gives me the tree level effective Yukawa interactions. So these are just the standard types of interactions that give masses to the up quarks, or the top quarks, and the down quarks. All right? Now this, notice, has a Higgs down coupling to the bottom quarks, and this is a Higgs up coupling to the up quarks. But there's no Higgs up coupling to the bottom quarks. Okay, this is that operator would be non-holomorphic, and it's forbidden by supersymmetry. But if you actually look at the full supersymmetric Lagrangian, and you write down a loop correction, and you write down a loop, you actually are able to write this interaction down. Notice the special thing about this interaction is that it couples the Higgs up star to the bottom quarks. And this is not present in the tree level effective Lagrangian. So quantum mechanically, as a result of integrating out heavy states, you find that there's a hard supersymmetry breaking dimension four operator generated by integrating out the quarks, or the super partners. Okay, it's got a nasty formula for it, whatever, you can do it. This is just, this script I is just a 3-point integral for loop calculations. But if you look, this diagram is actually the leading term, and it has this simple form. Okay, it has this coefficient, delta HB. It's proportional to the strong coupling because this is a gluino, and it has a mu from the trilinear term and a gluino mass insertion from a mass on the fermion propagator. And since quarks run in the loop, it's down by a power of the quark mass squared. As you take all the super partners as heavy as you want, hundreds of TeV, if you take them all heavy at the same rate, then this effective operator does not decouple. And so there are effects present in the effective 2X doublet model that do not decouple, and that if you could detect them would be evidence of some physics going on at a very, possibly extremely high scale associated with supersymmetry breaking.
Detect them in some sense. You can only play or change in neutral currents. If you fix the masses of the X or Higgs, keep it close to the Higgs scale. But if everything decouples,
it would be a tuned situation in this particular case, yes.
So suppose you're just doing using the full MSSM Lagrangian.
Yeah.
Have people ever considered these kind of loop diagrams just in that context? Because it seems like you would have. I mean, so these are just new, completely new loop diagrams.
Oh yeah. I mean, I don't want to. I should mention. I guess my citations are on the next page. This is not brand new, but the next thing I would talk about would be, but yes, people have considered this.
It's a fun way that in the next corrections to the master.
So I'll tell you right now. So adding this effective operator now after integrating out the quarks in the effective 2X doublet model, this is now the quantum effective Lagrangian. You have this new interaction with the Higgs.
And what happens is when you plug in the Higgs beta, so the Higgs down has a V cosine beta as its beta. So for now, since you have two Higgs doublets, there's sort of an overall scale of the vacuum expectation value of the BEVs of the Higgs, but there's also a relative size between whether you're talking about the Higgs up or the Higgs down, and this is parameterized by the parameter beta and angle, or by the parameter, as it's usually called, tan beta. So Higgs, the Higgs down has a V cosine beta BEV, and the Higgs up has a V sine beta BEV. And tan beta can be quite large. So tan beta can be as large as 50, if you like. And so if it is 50, then this interaction, despite the fact that it was a loop correction, is not that small. Its effects are not that small after all. And the reason is because when you look at the effective Lagrangian and you plug in the Higgs BEVs, all right, the tree level one is cosine beta suppressed, but the loop factor one is not suppressed by cosine beta because it enters with the sine beta because it's a Higgs up. So factoring out the cosine beta, ignoring just sort of other hard breaking corrections here because of this tan beta factor, you find that this the estimate for the bottom quark mass is shifted from its supersymmetric expectation by this radiative correction. So you have these shifts from a supersymmetric relation. So you have a supersymmetric relation between two Higgs doublet model parameters, the bottom mass, the bottom quark Yukawa, the VEV, and the angle associated with the Higgs sector. And it's shifted due to supersymmetry breaking effects. And so what you have here is your first example of a tan beta enhanced radiative correction to a supersymmetric relation. The supersymmetric relation is this. It's equal to 1 if this is supersymmetric, and any deviation is due to this hard supersymmetry breaking. And this is not just, even though it's a loop factor, it's still a 20% correction. And the fact that it's a 20% correction means that it's potentially observable. Okay, given parameters, given measured parameters that are known to a few percent, you can actually detect this deviation. It will stand out. It will stand out. Okay. This would require a precision fixed program, which is probably doable only at the ILC. I don't know the details of the how much precision Higgs stuff you can do at LHC. Okay, so just in a brief, just to finish here, I'll discuss a couple of issues with similar types of wrong Higgs interactions in the Chargino sector of the MSSM. Okay, so if I just write out the Lagrangian associated with the Charginos and neutralinos of the MSSM, this is what I get. Okay, if you want to know, there's a kinetic term. In what's called the Kähler potential, all right, this thing, where this is a vector superfield, these are chiral superfields. And if you write this thing out in component form, you find these interactions between the Gaginos, the Higgsinos, and the Higgs. And then there are soft supersymmetry breaking parameters and the mu term. Now, if you look at this interaction, this is supersymmetric and gauge invariant. And these couplings, these Yukawa couplings, are related trivially to the gauge couplings at tree level. Now, because of supersymmetry breaking, there will be one loop corrections to these relations. And these are examples of hard supersymmetry breaking effects. But those are not the ones I'm going to talk about. I'd like to talk about wrong Higgs interactions. So if you look here at, say, this one. So here's a Gaugino. And here's a down Higgsino, but here's a down Higgs. Notice the analog interaction with a Higgs up, unstarred, is not present in this supersymmetric Lagrangian. So I could just replace the Higgs down with a Higgs up, and this interaction would be gauge invariant, but it would be hard supersymmetry breaking. It would couple the wrong Higgs. And when I give the Higgs their VEVs, I might expect to see some tan beta enhanced effects coming from that. And so that's what I want to look for. So on the next page, I'm going to tell you, I'm just going to write for you again, the wrong Higgs interactions. So if I just, I'm just taking each of these four interactions, and I'm replacing the Higgs with the unstarred other Higgs. OK, so here they are. And I'm going to focus on K3 for the rest of the talk.
because it couples the wrong it couples the Higgs up, the wrong Higgs to the Higgs-Zeno down. And so let's try to look at the effects of this operator in the MSSM. So first I've shown you that there exist these gauge invariant wrong Higgs operators, or that they potentially could exist. Now let's try to imagine a scenario where they would be generated by radiative effects by integrating out some heavy state that feels supersymmetry breaking. And an example that will do that is a messenger sector with modified messenger interactions. Okay, such interactions have appeared in the literature, and here is the basic idea of the superpotential. Not only do you have the Z-MM bar coupling, but you have Higgs messenger interactions. And if you have such additional interactions, then I'll show you in just a moment that you can generate these effective operators. And this form of this superpotential can be constrained if these messengers transform under SU3, SU2, and U1, as I've written here. Okay? So with this messenger Lagrangian, you can start doing triangle graphs. And if you do, if you start evaluating these graphs, what you find is that the coefficient, the effective coefficient K3 of this effective wrong Higgs operator goes like a loop factor times F over Z squared squared. Okay, because of these F mass insertions here. And so for the limit of heavy messengers, this effect decouples. All right? However, if the messengers are light, just the lightest messenger being around 10 TeV or greater, then you can still integrate out the messengers, but the operator does not necessarily decouple. All right? And however, you can't use this type of approximation I've used to evaluate this graph. You actually have to put in messenger mass eigenstates, calculate the effective operator. So let me just skip the details of that and tell you that you can derive a general expression for the effective coefficient K3 over G. All right, it's just equal to a loop factor, basically, multiplied by this function f of x, where x is f over z squared. All right, but the details are not really important here. The point is that the value of K3 over G can range between 1 and 0.1 over 16 pi squared as the messengers run between 10 TeV and 50 TeV, the lightest messenger. Okay? So this is what I'm doing. I'm just trying to tell you that what I'm doing is reasonable, that I'm using an effective field theory where I'm integrating out states that are greater than 10 TeV. And so an effective field theory analysis is valid. And we're getting just a loop, a small coefficient that is loop suppressed. So here's some sample points for tan beta equals 50. So this is just more points to show you that I'm not doing anything crazy. And then we can look at the effects on the Chargino sector. So here, I apologize for all the equations. But if I just write down the effective total Gaugino Lagrangian with the new wrong Higgs interactions, and I look at their effect on the supersymmetric Chargino mass matrix, here's the supersymmetric prediction for what the Chargino mass matrix should look like. All right, there's only two new parameters, m and mu. And the off-diagonal parameters are determined in terms of the electroweak sector by the W boson mass and the Higgs sector by this rotation angle beta. And okay, but now adding these new wrong Higgs interactions, I find, well, the point is that since this off-diagonal element of the Chargino mass matrix is cosine beta suppressed, just like the bottom quark mass was, you expect to see a relative tan beta enhancement between this tree level parameter and the wrong Higgs radiative correction from K3. And in fact, it's not complicated. That's exactly what you see, that there is a supersymmetric. Here's the effect from this wrong Higgs operator. And so now you see that there's an enhanced correction to this supersymmetric relation between the supersymmetric value for the off-diagonal element of the Char-Gino mass matrix and the actual effective element that you might get in a theory where K3 is generated by integrating out, say, messengers. Yes.
K3 can be complex in general.
Which would
complicate the situation. And yes, so I would, one of my next goals is to take care of the scenario where there is CP violation. In the following, I'm going to assume that the physics that generates, say, K3, or the physics of the messenger sector is CP conserving.
Because you would be sensitive to that, with the CP violation. So that you have a fundamentally enhanced mixer, which would feed into the electric type of the whole.
Oh, that's a good idea. No problem. Okay, so
basically, what we have to do is we know what the supersymmetric value, we know what the supersymmetric prediction is in terms of the rotation angle of the Higgs sector beta and the W mass. But what we don't know right now, at least, is the effective off-diagonal element of the Char-Gino mass matrix. So we need to somehow take physical observables of the Char-Gino sector and figure out what this thing is in terms of those physical parameters of the Char-Gino sector. And so in order to do this, you just pretend you have an arbitrary matrix, an arbitrary Char-Gino mass matrix, and you just diagonalize it with arbitrary two unitary transformations. So any matrix X can be diagonalized to have positive definite eigenvalues by a unitary rotation on the left and a different unitary transformation on the right. These can be parameterized in general by general unitary matrices. And what you're really doing here is you're exchanging the parameters of your Char-Gino mass matrix for a different set of parameters. Namely, you're changing interaction eigenstate parameters, the elements of that mass matrix, x11, x22, x12, x21, in terms of the masses of the particles, mchi1 and mchi2, and two real numbers, the right and left rotation angles, and four phases. Now, if you assume CP violation, or if you assume that there's no CP violation, then you'll find that all your parameters are real, and you're really, the simple picture is that you're just exchanging four parameters of your Char-Gino mass matrix for the left-right rotation angles and the two masses of the Char-Ginos. Now, these authors described how to take polarized or unpolarized D+C- collisions and extract from them the physical parameters of the Char-Gino mass matrix, or excuse me, the physical parameters of the Char-Gino system. And these, this analysis did not assume supersymmetric relations between the parameters of the Char-Gino system. And so what we really have is four physical parameters of the Char-Gino system and four unknown interaction eigenstate parameters of the Char-Gino mass matrix. So you just take, to make a long story short, you just take four equations and four unknowns, and you can derive the deviation. Basically, if I look here, so this delta 2,1 parameterized the deviation from 1 of that supersymmetric relation. And so by using these four equations and four unknown, I can solve for this delta 2,1 in terms of Char-Gino, the physical parameters of the Char-Gino sector. Okay, so you get an equation in the end that relates just the parameters of the Char-Gino sector to delta 2,1. Okay, so the point is that you can take, and this delta 2,1 can range between 0.02 and 0.22 as compared to the number 1. So this can be, a tan beta enhanced radiative correction to this supersymmetric relation. This would be 0 if this K3, this effective operator, were exactly 0. Okay? And so that's really That's really the point. And then there's, I'll just skip this last part. I can tell you about that later if anybody wants to talk to me afterwards about it. And so let me just quick conclusion. So I've tried to show you that SUSY predicts dimension four wrong Higgs interactions in the Chargino neutralino sector are just zero at tree level. I've tried to show you that then engage mediation with special messenger Higgs interactions, that these interactions, when you integrate out the messengers, can generate these new operators at one loop. And then I've showed you that these interactions can lead to large corrections to the supersymmetric relations if tan beta is 50, is a large parameter. And then I've described how you can take physical parameters of the Chargino sector plus the parameters of the electroweak and Higgs sector to combine them in a particular way to isolate the effects of this new wrong-Higgs interaction. And therefore, this is a promising way to extract effects of 10 TeV plus physics from doing physics only at, say, an E plus E minus collider with 500 GeV center mass energy. And similar effects should exist in the neutralino sector, but I haven't investigated those, and those are presently under study, as well as the issue of CP violation. So thank you very much.
If you integrate the messenger out, do you have also the non-linearizable corrections to super potential? Like HU, HT squared.
Oh, I believe you would, yes.
Yes.
I haven't investigated those, but I think those are interesting too.
Because they come sort of in the same order of magnitude as suppose occurs by the same sort of ratio of scales.
Right. So HU, HD squared would maybe come from a, you would even have supersymmetric, you know, SUSY breaking. Cortic Higgs interaction. So, right, which could potentially help. But I don't know, maybe they
presumably
could.
Presumably, if you integrate messenger out, you get both SUSY and non SUSY correction.
Right. Those could, so at large tan beta, that Higgs up, Higgs down interaction is not so good for lifting the Higgs mass, if that's one of the things you were thinking of. But the Higgs up to the fourth might be. So, but I'm interested in looking at that. I haven't looked at that in detail yet. So,
I guess you maybe haven't done a calculation yet, but I was wondering if just naively the sizes of these effects would be big enough to split, say, a neutralino LSP from a Chargino and LSP when you had a Wino, a mostly Wino LSP.
Yeah. So
M2 is a lot smaller than M1 review. And your LSPs, mostly Wino, but you also have a Chargino about the same mass.
Yeah, I believe in the end the correction to the mass I can say is not that great, but I don't know for sure.
Any other questions? No,